Welcome to The Informed Gardener with your host, Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott, Associate Professor and Extension Urban Horticulturist at Washington State University. And now, the science behind gardening with Dr. Linda.
Hi, I'm Linda Chalker-Scott, and welcome back to Season 3 of The Informed Gardener. I'm here as your online garden advisor, bringing you current and practical scientific information for use in your own gardens and landscapes. Each week, I try to follow a theme throughout the podcast, and this week's theme is Better Living Through Chemistry. In our myths segment, I'll take on the notion that organic products are somehow better and safer than chemicals. But first, let's look at better living through chemistry in the news. I've got a virtual smorgasbord of news clips on natural plant products and their positive effects on people. So let's see what's happening with plant products and health. I saw you in the garden, baby. You look so debonair. Beware of the flowers, because I'm sure they're going to get you. Yeah. Here's the first headline. Compounds in mate tea induce death in colon cancer cells. Well, if you're not familiar with mate, it's a plant that's been used in South America for a long time, both as a beverage and also in medicine. It's made from the leaves of a holly whose name is Ilex paraguayensis, and as the name might tell you, it is found in Paraguay and other places in South America. Researchers showed in a recent study that if they took human colon cancer cells and put them into petri dishes along with the extract from mate, and this is about enough mate you'd find in one cup of brew mate, that the bioactive compounds in the mate actually killed the cancer cells. What they did apparently was damage the DNA enough, causing it to self-destruct, and then the cancer cells don't multiply. This is a really exciting discovery because if you drink beverages like mate, it's going to go through your body and it's going to end up going through your colon. And these compounds actually get absorbed by the colon. So it's a perfect way to deliver an anti-cancer agent to possible colon cancer cells. They also found out that mate reduces inflammation. And inflammation is often a precursor to cancer development and a lot of other human health problems. So it's got a 1-2 punch. It's got the anti-cancer agent and it's also got the reduction in inflammation agent. So anyway, if you haven't tried mate before, it really is an interesting beverage. Many years ago, I got some tea. It's called Morning Thunder, and it's a black tea that also has mate in it. And I tell you, this stuff really packs a kick. It has caffeine, obviously, but it's got something extra, too. And so if you're interested in kind of a different type of morning beverage that really will make you feel like buffalo are thundering through your head, try a cup of mate, and you'll be doing your colon a favor, too. Drifts upon the breeze, dandelion seed. Okay, the next item is entitled, Could Rosemary Scent Boost Brain Performance? And everyone who cooks is familiar with rosemary. It's one of those kitchen herb staples, and you might have a little pot of it growing outside, and you cut the leaves off and add them to your sauces and stews. And it also contains some very interesting essential oils. Now, essential oils are things that you smell and you immediately associate with a plant. So peppermint has an essential oil. It smells like mint. Rosemary has an essential oil. Lots of plants do. Well, it turns out that they used these essential oils and they exposed them to 20 subjects. And then they tested the cognitive performance as well as the mood of the subject who sniffed the essential oils. So what they did was they took blood samples and measured whether or not the essential oil was actually in the blood. And then they also did these speed and accuracy cognitive tests to see if rosemary oil had any kind of impact. And it turns out that people that sniffed rosemary oil actually had better results on both speed and accuracy in these cognitive tests, and they had better moods. So it not only improves your mood, but it apparently puts you in the mood to take tests and do well at them. So there's some really interesting research with this essential oil and several others. So if you've got a test coming up, maybe go grab some rosemary and crush it up and take a big whiff. And he was walking in the garden. And he was walking in the night. All right, on to number 3, eating citrus fruit may lower women's stroke risk. There was a 14-year study that just recently was ended looking at almost 70,000 women and looking at their food intake, including details of fruit consumption, vegetable consumption, and also whether or not
they suffered any types of strokes. And so it's a huge repository of data that the researchers are going through now, 14 years worth of data, and extracting little tidbits. So this was a very interesting one, which is that apparently eating citrus fruits, especially things like oranges and grapefruits, may lower the risk of ischemic stroke. Now, if you're not familiar with what ischemic stroke is, this is the type of stroke that's caused by constriction in a blood vessel. So, you know, you get it tightening up and it builds up pressure behind it, and that leads to stroke in the brain. So eating things that like grapefruit and oranges apparently reduced the risk of this type of stroke by 19%, which is a really pretty hefty amount to reduce stroke by. It turns out that oranges and grapefruit, like lots of other plant parts, have particular types of flavonoids associated with them. Now, flavonoids is a really large class of compounds. You may have heard of them before. A lot of them are associated with antioxidant activity. And in oranges and grapefruits, it's a group of flavonoids called flavanones. And these particular compounds, you find them in many fruits, including the citrus fruits, vegetables, chocolate, wine, all those great things that we love. So apparently by either eating fruit, especially the citrus fruits, or drinking juices, women were able to reduce their stroke risk. Now, researchers do recommend that rather than drinking juices, because they are rather heavily sugared, it's probably better to eat the fruit instead, and you get the extra benefit of fiber, too, and fiber is a good thing. Not only does it reduce the stroke risk, but just like a lot of these other compounds, it apparently also has an anti-inflammatory effect. And maybe that's how the blood vessels are protected from ischemic stroke. Not really sure how it all connects yet. This is just some beginning information from this big 14-year study, but very exciting. And if you don't particularly think about eating oranges and grapefruit, maybe you should eat more of them.
Because every day's a holiday in Mr. Moody's garden, where little girls say pardon and how do you do?
Talking about lots of things to eat and to sniff, and now let's talk about some stuff for your skin. This particular tidbit is called Time May Be Better for Acne Than Prescription Creams. Now, for myself, it's been a few decades since I've had to worry very much about acne, but there's a lot of people that still worry about acne, and the prescription creams that go along with it can be pretty harsh. And I remember from my kids having to use benzoyl peroxide, it bleaches stuff. You know, it's really a pretty harsh medicine. So researchers have been studying the effects of thyme and marigold and myrrh tinctures on the bacterium that actually causes acne on skin. And so this was obviously a petri dish experiment again, and they found out that when they exposed these particular bacteria to these different tinctures, that they all actually killed the bacteria, and thyme was the most effective of the three. So thyme was really the winner in this particular contest. And it even was more beneficial than benzoyl peroxide. As I said, that's a typical type of acne cream that you can get at the drugstore. It worked even better than that particular cream. So these are nice herbal alternatives to the standard cream, which, as I said, is pretty harsh, pretty rough on your skin, and has a bleaching effect. And these tinctures are not harmful in terms of causing any kind of damage to the skin. And repeat after me, they have anti-inflammatory activity. So again, it's these compounds that plants make that have some added special benefits to us if we use them properly. So these herbal preparations are kind of a nice alternative to the kind of rough and tumble benzoyl peroxide, which, as I said, has a pretty severe bleaching effect and can be pretty rough on your face. It can irritate it a lot. These tinctures or extracts actually reduce inflammation, so they're pretty gentle on your skin. And you can probably find them at a lot of alternative medicine stores, at drug stores. Any type of large grocery would have these types of extracts. You might as well give it a try. It certainly can't cause any harm, and you might find just the right prescription for you.
Homegrown's all right with me. Homegrown is the way it should be. Homegrown is a good thing. Plant that bell and let it ring.
The last item I have for you is age-old remedies using white tea, witch hazel, and rose may be beneficial. This was a pretty large study. They looked at 21 different types of extracts, including white tea, witch hazel, and rose, and they exposed human skin cells to these extracts. This was a lab experiment. It was not with actual people, but with cultures of skin cells, specifically looking to see what would happen in terms of anti-inflammatory activity and antioxidant activity. Now, both of these things, inflammation and oxidation, are things associated not only with skin aging, but with skin cancer as well. So it's important to note that these results aren't necessarily indicative that these extracts will actually fight skin cancer, but they have the benefits of being anti-inflammatory and having antioxidant activity. And what they found was the three, white tea, witch hazel, and rose, had the most potential, and white tea was the very best of all. So again, just like with the recommendation about acne medicine, maybe you want to try some of these other extracts, white tea, witch hazel, and rose, and see what happens when you put them on your skin. Maybe you'll be inventing the next anti-aging compound. Well, after all this talk about extracts and things to eat and things to drink, I'm now tempted to make myself a big citrus salad, boil a pot of mate, and take it all into my bathtub and fill it up with rosemary, thyme, white tea, witch hazel, and rose petals, and just lay back. Our news items really showed a lot of the benefits of plant extracts. But we need to take this a little bit farther and look at the opposite side of the coin, perhaps the darker side of the coin. And this leads to the myth of the day. Today's myth is that botanical pesticides are safer than synthetics. There's a real movement towards using non-synthetic pesticides, especially things that are maybe extracted from plants. And while that's all well and good, there is unfortunately kind of a dangerous predisposition we have to assuming that nature is kind and good and that plants aren't going to hurt us. We need to look at this a little bit closer. But before we do that, let's identify exactly what a pesticide is. Okay, well, the name pesticide has the name pest in it, means pest, and side, which means death. And so a pesticide is something that causes death to any kind of pest. You can divide this up more. You can have herbicides, kill plants, insecticides, kill insects, fungicides, fungus, rodenticides, kill rodents. So you can go down the whole list, and anything that ends in side is something that kills. So plants are a really good repository of lots of these things, because you think about it, plants are pretty much stuck where they are, and they need to fight their enemies, and so the way they fight their enemies is chemically. And we've been kind of smart in figuring out what some of these substances are, and we extract them, and we purify them, and then we use them to fight pests in our garden. The nice thing about these substances, because they're natural, they don't last a long time in the environment. In other words, they're not persistent. We have a legacy of things like DDT and other types of really nasty pesticides that are still lingering because they're synthetic. So natural pesticides don't linger. But plants aren't distinguishing between you and a pest. To a plant, anything that bothers it is going to be a pest. So if it makes something to kill a pest, that pest might just be you. This is why we have to really think about how dangerous some of these compounds are before we use them. So let's talk a little bit about how we figure out how dangerous pesticides are. And before they actually go on the market, and this is with any pesticide, whether it's a synthetic or whether it's a natural substance, they have to be tested. And they're tested through a variety of ways, sometimes with human cells, sometimes with rats. There's a whole bunch of different testings. And what they look for is a number that's called the LD50. And what a LD stands for is lethal dose, and 50 means 50% killed. So an LD50 means how much a chemical is needed to kill 50% of whatever it is, skin cells, rats, insects, whatever is being tested. So when you're looking at an LD50, a low number means it's a really dangerous pesticide, and a high number means it's not. So in other words, you have to give it more and more and more to get an LD50. If it's a low number, it means you don't need very much at all. So let's look at some of these. And just to give you a little bit of perspective, aspirin has an LD50 of 1,200. In comparison, nicotine, which is a natural substance made by tobacco and has been used as a pesticide for centuries, has an LD50 of 55, which is really a low number, which means it's really, really dangerous. Pyrethrin, which again is a natural plant product, has an LD50 of 200. Glyphosate, now this is a synthetic one, this is the active ingredient Roundup, has an LD50 of 5,600. So it's 100 times less toxic, ounce for ounce, than nicotine is. True, it's a synthetic, And it's true that synthetics can be a problem, but when you compare it to something like nicotine, you can see it's not nearly as dangerous. Malathion, which is another commonly used synthetic, has an LD50 of anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000. So it's in that same range where it's not as dangerous anymore. So it's not to say that chemicals aren't dangerous, especially pesticides, but the point is that a lot of them are made by plants, and they're even more dangerous than the ones that we use that happen to be synthetics. So we have to remember, in plant warfare, there is no distinction between friends and enemies. Whoever's in the line of fire is who's going to get toasted. And finally, let's do our gardening tip for the day. Now we're focusing on organic chemistry, so this time, rather than looking so much at the chemistry, let's look at organic, and specifically let's look at organic matter and how we use it in the garden. And there's no doubt, I'm one of the biggest proponents of using organic matter, but the point of this particular tip is how to apply it most effectively. And it really depends on what you're trying to do. So if you're planting a vegetable garden or an annual bed, or in other words, something that you're working up year after year, more or less like you would a crop field, it's perfectly fine to just go ahead and dig that compost in if you'd like to. But you don't have to. If you're familiar with what's happening in conventional agriculture now, you may be aware of something that's called no-till agriculture. And this is just taking the organic matter, the compost, and laying it on top and letting nature do the work of working it in. So if you prefer not to disturb your soil and bring all those weed seeds up, just lay the compost on top and go ahead and plant the garden as usual. Now, if you're doing perennial beds and landscapes, you absolutely do not want to be working it into the soil. You don't want to be disturbing the soil structure, disturbing the roots, ruining all those nice mycorrhizal connections. You just lay the compost on top and let nature do the work. Rainwater will take the nutrients down, the worms come up and bring things down. Nature's little rototillers, the moles, will come and they'll do the same thing. So with the perennials and the landscape beds, just lay it on top and let nature do its work. But don't leave the compost uncovered. It is a weed magnet, and if you leave the compost uncovered, you will have a nice crop of weeds for your next feature film, Weeds Gone Wild. So make sure you put something else, like perhaps a good woody mulch over the top of the compost to keep the weeds out. But absolutely do add organic matter. It's one of the best ways you can feed your garden. Hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Be sure to join us next time when our theme will be subarctic gardening. We'll have a gardener on the street segment with master gardeners from Anchorage, Alaska, and find out what it's like growing plants at 61 degrees north latitude. Until then, happy gardening.
You've been listening to The Informed Gardener. To catch this and other shows from previous seasons, go to theinformedgardener.com, mynorthwest.com, or search for us on iTunes. I have no reason.